It is not about preventing illness, but about slowing down the rate at which people become sick. The speed at which the outbreak plays out matters hugely for its consequences. Our healthcare systems nationwide will become overwhelmed by a sudden explosion of illness. If we are all vigilant, we can impede the transmission of the virus and slow the rate. Precautionary measures will slow down the rate of speed. These include, of course, proper hand washing, covering your mouth, nose when you're coughing or sneezing, social distancing, avoidance of large gatherings, and in some cases, self-quarantine if you feel ill. Public health and our county health officer and members of our clinic team will make further comments on this later as we get into both precautionary measures as well as our preparedness. The serious consequences of COVID-19 target our over 60 age group, especially those with underlying health issues such as heart disease, lung disease, hypertension, diabetes, and those that are immunocompromised. As such, I feel that the commissioners need to concentrate our focus on this group. The county will be taking measures to help with providing extended food supplies, as necessary to the Sublet Center, Rendezvous Point, Southwest Pioneers, and those over 60 who may be quarantined for 14 days or longer and are unable to obtain supplies through normal channels. These are steps that we are prepared to do immediately and have been discussed in a collaborative effort with the aforementioned groups as well as other partners such as public health, the county health officer, emergency management, the Sublet County Rural Healthcare District, local grocers, the Lions Club, and other potential networks. Through a collaborative effort spearheaded by public health and local community partners, including the Lions Club, the Red Cross, our local churches and volunteer groups, their focus can be on the needs of those less than 60 years of age. The county is committed to help as necessary with this as well. We're now going to begin our discussion of precautionary measures that need to be instituted, followed in our community, because as I said, our best bet in this virus is slowing down the rate of speed. So I would like to have Jenna Lee and Dr. Fitzsimmons, our county health officer, come up, and you can lead the discussion in terms of the public portion of what we need to hone in terms of precautionary measures.
Mr. Chairman, could I say something?
Yes,
before?
Sir.
I would like to thank everybody that's been involved for the last week, the professionalism and the organizational skills of from the people at the clinics to the county health nurse to everyone is phenomenal. And it is nice to know when things happen like this that we can get things done very, very quickly. And it has happened here in Sublet County. And as a county commissioner, I'm very proud to be working with people that are committed to taking care of the people of Sublet County. So, again, thank you very much.
Okay, Jana.
Okay.
Take it away.
Okay, this is my roadshow.
Yes.
Can I just...
You can take it out however you want to do.
Is it okay if I look at everybody for a minute?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So I'm kind of doing my roadshow a little bit to get the public word out, and thank you, Dr. Burnett, for kind of giving the overview of the medical side of things. So far, we've set up our health EOC, and that has included the Sheriff's Department, our public health office, my preparedness assistant, Steve, is ill this morning, so he couldn't be here. Jim Mitchell from Emergency Management, and then the clinic team, along with our county health officer, Dr. Fitzsimmons. So we've been really gearing up to try to, from our state, to use the guidelines to get information out through Travis, our PIO, to as a statewide message and as a community message to get one voice to help people know what the direction is for people to understand the system. Right now, our system and guidelines ask us to have patients come in through a provider, and then they get screened. If they have that fever, cough, shortness of breath, those are the symptoms they're looking for, and then a travel history or positive contact to a positive. If they're in that older age group with underlying health disease like heart disease, lung disease. So, and that is the priorities right now for testing. We have a system in place that we asked through the clinic that people call the clinic. The front desk will do some screening questions. They'll get a phone number. The nurses there will call patients. And if they feel like they need to be, or potential for to be tested, they're asking people to come in through the ER entrance and sit in their car and wait. The staff will come out dressed in appropriate PPE. I should let Vicki tell you all this. Okay. And so that they can contain and do appropriate measures to get that person tested. And then through a provider, yep.
Yeah, we actually are screening them outside at the front door, mm-hmm. and then kind of triaging them that way so that there'll be somebody at the front door that will screen them and then direct them where to go. And then we'll decide, who needs to come into the emergency room, who needs to go into a special exam room that we've kind of set off for that purpose, and who we could test out in their car who are not that ill and don't need to actually come into the hospital. And that's just been in the last couple days that we've got that, and we're still refining that and working out the kinks, but we've been doing that for a day in Pinedale and really just getting started today in Marble.
So. Dr. Fitzsimmons, while we're talking about that, you might speak to and clarify when you're talking about testing, availability of testing, shortage of testing, and how we're going to be handling the majority of those cases.
Yeah, right now the testing is going through the state, and you have to submit it through a FedEx delivery down to Cheyenne. And when you want to do that, you have to call up the state first, and they're going to run through that list of people that that fit the bill. And if the patient fits the bill, then you can kind of send that down. They will test people that don't fit that bill, but they won't be prioritized. So we do have the ability to go through that. Not really sure how long the turnaround on that is. What we've been told with priority cases, it'll be 1 or 2 days. Cases that are not prioritized, I'm not certain about that. We've tested at least one person and haven't got the results back on that. So, but we expect that testing to be available through the regular commercial labs very soon, within days. And at that point in time, that turnover is probably going to be about 24 to 48 hours. In the meantime, anybody that we do test is going to, we're going to ask them to self-quarantine until we get some results on that. Additionally, anybody that we test for coronavirus, we're going to first test them for flu because that is still around and those symptoms are very similar.
Do you have an idea quantitatively how many tests you may get?
No.
So right now the state is doing the guidance, and all the testing is going through the Wyoming Department of Health. As that builds out, they're building their partner labs and having that process, but so that the information can still flow through the state and they get direct reporting. So at this point, Sharon can say this, but our testing will be, gathering the specimens locally. but will be shipped into the system, which we do all the time. We send our labs all the time to the state health lab. And so that until the state, Dr. Harris, our state health officer, is great, and she's providing very clear direction on how that guidance for testing, what the priorities are now. As our tests become much more available, we know that guidance is going to change, and it will probably look a lot different in the process, but we will do our best to get the word out on how that changes. But I still think the, just the call the clinic, don't come in the front door, call the clinic and work the process. We aren't going to be testing everyone right now, but that's okay. We're prioritizing those people that are most at risk for severe disease. 80 to 85% of people will have a mild case of this and can recover at home. They just need to stay home when they're sick and not expose other people. It's that 15 to 20% that have more severe disease, and sometimes that's going into the second week when they're showing those signs, that will overwhelm our system if we don't slow the process down, because they will need to be hospitalized. And Dr. Fitzsimmons can talk a little bit more what that more severe disease looks like.
Well, the more severe disease is mostly going to revolve around difficulty breathing, and really that's it. Mm-hmm. In general, when people are getting really sick with this, it's because they're going into respiratory failure. Mm-hmm. So, and I think, that's going to be clear to anybody mm-hmm. when they're sick, that sick. But we would like to be able to help triage with that. So if people have questions, they're definitely, please give us a call. And that's a little bit of the system that we've set up. When people come to us with symptoms, we want to put them into these three categories: people who should be tested but are not very sick and can stay at home, people who should be tested and are sick and should be seen in the clinic, or people who are desperately ill and really need to be brought into the emergency room. And that's part of what we're trying to separate that into.
Dr. Fitzsimmons, could you address for the public concern, because I know professionally this is how it's carried on in practices, whether it's an influenza outbreak or whatever it is, but I want to try to get the point across to emphasize to the public, you will have scores more people coming to the clinic with symptoms of illness. There will be a number of them that aren't going to meet the qualifications to be checked for COVID-19. There are going to be some that aren't going to be test positive for flu or other things. I think the point is, and we're on the same page here, there will be routine advice to those individuals, just like we've been talking about, to have them go home and stay home while they're sick.
Yeah.
Till they're symptom free.
Right? Yeah. Definitely people who, they have a cough and they have fever, but they don't feel too bad. We don't necessarily want them coming into clinic and may not be able to do anything for them anyway. That's very useful. And I think part of that is that as this goes on, we get a little deeper into this, maybe even starting now, I think people that are having symptoms of cough and colds and stuff may want to separate themselves from people, because some people, this illness is going to be so mild that it'll be easier to say, oh, this is just a cold. And in that case, we'd still prefer you to stay at home, even if it is just some other little.
But Dr. Harris is advising that people that are over 65 that have those underlying health conditions really start thinking about where they're going and if they are putting themselves at risk.
Yeah. And I think the point, and this is going to be reemphasized time and time again, public health through the clinic, in the public, mm-hmm. I think the point that we are trying to stress in terms of mitigating this virus is the rate at which it spreads. And because of that, we all play a role in terms of limiting that rate. Now, fortunately and unfortunately, for the people that are in the younger age group, it's fortunate from the standpoint of they're going to have mild cases. There are going to be some that are so subclinical, it's not going to be any more different than a common cold. Unfortunately, it's going to be those types of individuals that it's going to be need to emphasize that they stay home or not, they avoid large crowds and gatherings as well, because it's that very subgroup that's going to have a tremendous part to play in the rate of the spread of this virus. So we have to get that out from a public standpoint. We have to get that out to our community.
And we did get a new, on the CDC, there's new guidance on categories for larger events in schools. And so I think we're kind of in that middle column. We're at the mild to moderate level. And there's definite recommendations for all kinds of different groups and individuals. So look on the CDC, great place, mitigation strategies. So the other thing is we are in very close contact with our school superintendents. And as we get guidance, I just got a new thing on my email that I need to get to the superintendents too about guidance for school closures. And they're very aware of everybody's going on spring break and going different ways. So
Can you discuss that some publicly? I mean, what I know it's on a tiered approach. I know it matters where it is in the state, how many cases is it in the county. Have you got any kind of indication from the state how that's going to impact or what the plan is as we move, if we move in that direction?
I think we'll get guidance from Dr. Harris specifically, and then through our CHOs, it'll be that process of how Dr. Fitzsimmons sometimes will be making calls along with guidance from them on how things, you know, gatherings over a certain amount of people, or if our senior centers are serving food in their traditional ways and group ways, or the sublet centers limiting their visitors, you know, and even friends and visitors now to try to dial in on those really at-risk populations.
Don, you to the point you're not limiting, you just have, as you're to the point of having no visitors.
We're not having visitors.
That's what I thought. So you're actually progressed to that point per state guidelines. Mm-hmm. And it's a good opportunity to let the public know that we, through the people we're working with, through the county health officer, through public health, we are closely adhering to the guidelines coming from both the CDC and the Department of Health.
Yep. That's our guidance, and that's what we'll... And then as testing moves on and we get more different guidance, probably testing will look different, but we are taking that directly from the Wyoming Department of Health.
Yeah, I think the guidelines on who gets tested will loosen up a lot.
Yep.
And that will help us, I think, if we, especially as we start to see positives, mm-hmm. then we'll want to test more to get an idea how much there is. And then that at some point in time, it will probably become about as useful as testing for influenza, which sometimes is mm-hmm. not all that useful because it's so prevalent.
And we will, as we start getting positives, I'll get reports on that, and we'll do investigations and contacts to positives out of the public health office. So that's all going to be changing. Right now we're looking at, I see a two-tiered plan. We have the community response and we have the medical response. And so on the community level, we had a really great discussion with food vendors and our senior centers yesterday on how we meet the needs of our at-risk groups, which is that over 65, and then processes to dial that in and how maybe senior centers could serve individual foods, handing them out to people in their cars, you know, or the delivery system and working our volunteers. And so that's, we're, you know, really focusing on getting all that stuff set up so that there's a really solid system and that we have a way. On discharge, as we tell patients, you know, these are resources available as I call and talk to people. Our my office does, you know, and follow up how that we can tie them into some resources. They may be in their home for 14 days, but that doesn't mean that Ridley's or Bernie's can't order online and have a delivery to their house or deliver, you know, pick up groceries outside of the grocery store, pharmacy stuff, you know. So we just don't want people going to the grocery store if you're sick or the pharmacy if you're sick. So we're trying to build that sign. At the same time, building the medical side and the response, and as that changes, you know, level one kind of I'm seeing is kind of the screening processes that we're doing now. We're having some detailed sessions on that next week on what level two looks like and level three, you know, as we and what those triggers are as we kind of change and go with our guidance to meet the needs. And then also too, how we backfill and create those resources for people at home.
So Janet, could you comment right now from the Department of Health, there is no specific restrictions on size of crowds gathering together.
The medium risk category says over 250 people. And then, you know, just kind of focusing on those at-risk groups, being very aware of what, where they're going and self-limiting. That's going to totally change if we get some positives.
Sure.
More positives across the state, which is going to happen.
Right. Could you, before we move into trying to look at an assessment of our needs, both from medical and community, can you just, for the record, so to speak, go over those precautionary measures that we ought to be trying to not only adhere to, but encourage amongst the people in our community?
The best thing we can do, what Dr. Burnett said, is the social distancing, 3 to 6 feet away. No more handshaking. Jim Mitchell has us doing the elbow bumps and kicking feet. Wash your hands. You know, cough into your sleeve, stay home if you're sick. All those kind of things that are just really basic, but they are our best tool to prevent the spread of disease and help protect our most at-risk populations. Because if we overwhelm our hospital systems, they may not be able to get that respiratory help that just won't have the resources in Wyoming and nationwide, really.
And for us, our hospital resources are downstream for us, so we don't know what that's going to look like for us. And, you know, we're maybe fortunate, maybe not, in that we utilize several different venues for hospitalized people. So we go down to Rock Springs, we go to Jackson, we go to Irmac. In a pinch, we may be able to use Kemmerer or Alpine, Afton. But on the other hand, we don't really have any of our own. So we're going to be dependent on what happens downstream with them. But in a lot of ways, will be part of what overwhelms them if that happens. So that's, you know, where the mitigation comes in, and hopefully everybody else is doing that. I know they are in Wyoming because we had the big county health officers meeting yesterday with them, and it seems like everybody in the state of Wyoming is doing this, and a lot of people are already closing down large gatherings, you know, so we see.
And it is a risk benefit ratio, and that sometimes that's going to be our county health officer's call.
Yeah. Right. So before we move on to trying to look at specific needs that the medical community may have, or questions from the public with regards to those needs, is there any comments or questions from the public at this time with regards to the precautions that we need to be taking, concerns about future restrictions as they come along? Are there any questions for Jan or Dr. Fitzsimmons or the commission at this time? Yes.
I'm sorry, Jan's got the 250 people limit as far as things. We have an event coming up in a couple weeks, and there's usually about 120 people. I'd say probably a good third of them are in the over 60 compromised category. Another third of them are the ones that are going to bring it to us.
I think that Dr. Burnett had kind of a, because we have a blood draw coming up in Marbleton at the end of the month too, and I'm like, do I cancel it? And I think we're going to look at doing it differently. We'll have separated stations. We'll be washing down our stations totally in between. We may have an at-risk kind of group, you know, like, so we separate more at-risk people to be drawn in a separate area. Maybe we can do that separately. Dr. Burnett said, you know, right now, maybe you keep it on the books and nobody's going to worry about it. If they, they'll totally understand
if
we
have to
cancel it the day before. I mean, because like in a week or two, if we have positives here in county, it's a whole different look.
And I think the number 250 there's a little bit of a sense that it's arbitrary, and mm-hmm. and that may kind of evolve to both from the CDC and the Department of Health, and I think we're as a community maybe free to choose some other number as well.
And if you know you have a lot of at-risk people,
this is it's definitely a close contact event. Mm-hmm. It's a cook-off.
I go with be safe. Postpone it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I heard you mention kind of cost benefit and sort of dovetails with that. Are you looking at probably doing special use permits if events are going to be held, and so you guys can look at the particulars of it and either approve some or deny some?
Guess I hadn't thought about that.
Put that on the list.
It sounds like a good idea.
Okay.
I mean, if mm-hmm. we have any ability to help
limit
people
that.
Make the right decisions, then I think we should.
So that starts into
any more. Yeah.
We know that the younger healthy people can get this disease and not even know they have it. Can that younger healthy person with the disease give it to others?
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
And usually a lot of times you are most infectious when you have that high fever, you're coughing and sneezing over someone, but you are also potentially infectious from 2 days after exposure to 14.
And Bob, that's a major concern. That's, we want to target that group because, like I said earlier, that's going to be the group that is going to be the key to success at trying slowing down the rate or the speed of this infection. So it's very critical.
Yeah, the closing of schools in pandemics reduces the spread by 15-20%. It's amazing how kind of getting the kids in hand helps quite a lot.
So we'll be working really closely with our schools to make those decisions because there's lots of ramifications when people can't work and take care of kids.
When you're talking about the younger age group, what age are you talking? Because like right now, kids are going on spring break. Some have gone out of town. Some are sticking around, but they may be doing group things with other kids. What age are you talking about?
Basically, under 20, they almost never have serious illness out here. The 20s to 30s are still generally pretty well protected. The group that seems to get the largest group that gets ill is probably in that of 50 to 65, although the older group, the 65 and older, are the ones who get very ill. So really, if you look at the below 30s, there's not a lot of serious illness, and under 20, you know, like in China, there was only one person under 20 that died out of 3,000, you know. And so
I guess I'm looking at the potential for, you know, the kids all being out of school and spreading around and coming back.
Yeah, coming back from college.
Is it?
But we really are low risk still in Wyoming. We have one case.
But I think the question George trying to get to mm-hmm. is the age group that can spread the contagion. You know, is it below 5? Is it between 5 and 15? I don't know.
Kind of don't have an answer for that. Yeah.
All right, so it's kind of 20 or below is the ones that you worry about spreading it.
I don't know that I have an answer for that at all.
I think the issue right now is just spring break and everybody, and then you get all those kids back, and it's the big pool.
You know, there's a lot of theory that younger kids may be less at risk for this because they have so much coronavirus in the forms of common cold. But I don't think we have enough information to say that there still can't be carriers of this or spread the disease. If you want to look at the number of cases of kids below 11, probably not any. Deaths below 11, not any in the world. But I don't know that we know the answer about them being able to be inoculated and spread the virus even though they're not affected by it.
Or I haven't seen anything that really says that any particular age group is better at spreading it, so just don't have the answer for that.
Any other questions with precautions? Yes, Roy.
You're talking about self-quarantining if you're younger. How long are you suggesting?
It's 14 days is pretty standard. After 14 days, the rate of transmission seems to just drop off.
Are they thinking about maybe quarantining any folks that come back from spring week that have been out of state for a certain period of time, just self-quarantining?
We don't have guidance from the state yet, but they are totally looking at all that stuff.
And I think that's, you know, this is an ongoing thing. It's going to change the statistics, the numbers, the decisions with coronavirus are going to change from the day they went on spring break to the day they come back. So I don't think we know the answer to that. But it is a concern because we have a large portion of our community that are going on spring break to various points, some of them internationally, some of them just domestic, that may be going to areas of greater outbreak.
So, I wanted to also ask about the woman from Sheridan that got it. It said that she had traveled domestically. What does that mean? Had she traveled out of the state, out of the county, out of the country?
Domestically wouldn't be out of the country. It would domestically would mean somewhere in the United States. It could be.
They're not really releasing exact details about her case.
I just wondered if she'd been to a major airport or had just gone to.
No, they won't tell us anything about her, and they won't even release her name. But the county health officer over there said that everybody knows who she is and they keep driving by her.
That speaks to a bigger picture. It's like, you know, if people get a virus, be kind. You know, be kind. Your health workers are going to be overwhelmed, you know, and it does create a really big stigma in small communities, and that can be pretty harsh.
I just wondered what the circumstances were.
Yeah, we just
they won't release it.
They won't tell us.
Okay.
Well, do we need to move forward with needs? Looking at needs.
So I have a few.
And let me just open this up. You know, when we're looking at medical needs in terms of preparedness, this needs to be an open discussion of what the clinic may need, what the sublet center may need, public health. We're trying to see if there's any. Are there areas in which the county commission may help meet those needs? I have a few questions of myself, but Jenna, go right ahead, please.
Okay. I need to get a line item created on my budget for coronavirus so that I have a way to maneuver my federal funds that should be coming within 30 days. So I don't know. I need to work with Carrie and you guys to be able to track all that funding. So I have a request from the state to whether I take 25% of that funding, 100% of that funding, and I don't know. I'm wondering. I'm asking you guys. I mean, at the front end, I think I take 25%, and then if you guys will float us, we'll just invoice for monies on top of that instead of trying to get money back on the back end.
So you need to explain that one again.
Okay. So probably $90,000 to $100,000 that I'm looking at probably getting from the first funding bill that the president signed. Mm-hmm. And so we have not got direction on how that can be spent yet. So I can request 25% of that funds upfront, 50%, 100%. But I guess my leanings is probably leaning towards, so that we can start those activities right away. You guys have always been gracious enough to foot our bills and float us if we need to while it gets invoiced and gets reimbursed.
And what you're saying, we would then backfill that with the money that you get from the federal government.
Funds. I think it would be easier for me, even if we took a fourth of it up front, to not have to try to give back money or figure that out on the backside. I'd sooner invoice it, and if you guys are good with that,
that's how we've done it in the past with other issues. Commissioners, Joel, Matt, do y'all have any problem with that?
None whatsoever.
This is Joel, no problem at all.
Okay. Okay. So we'll do it that way.
Then as we beef up our volunteer stuff and our ICS team, I'm wondering if we have permission to ask our partners, as in Shad and probably the sheriff's office, if I can steal people or use time from Will Gay, Kenna, those kind of people that are county employees, to help manage these medical volunteers, the other volunteers, whatever Steve and Jim need as we need to gear up.
You know, from my standpoint, I would hate to answer for the people in those departments.
No, I just want your permission to even ask them.
You can
okay,
talk
ask
to them.
Casey. Okay, yeah.
You can actually talk to them. They may have their own stated reasons for their personnel and other preferences, not preferences, but priorities. But as far as approaching them and asking them, go, feel free.
Okay. Then, okay, what was the other one I want to do? I think, if I get direction from this funding that I can hire somebody, what's the, or part-time, if we need to gear up for, and I think these volunteer management and getting the creation of some of these networks are going to take a lot of somebody's time. What's the process, or is that can I do that to create a temporary position through the county to hire somebody?
Now, does that come through the Department of Health, or is this coming just from your perspective? In other words,
well, I've been told that we could, so I've been told that this money that we can start leaning into, that's another question, is like how, like Steve's position, if we can pay him overtime. The grant will pick it up, but is that okay with the county? Because the county has a no overtime policy.
This is an emergency preparedness situation. This is going to be at your discretion. I think the county is taking the position that we want to give you whatever support you can, that you need specific to this COVID-19 outbreak.
So I don't know if I can, and that'll be an evolving thing as I get direction for how we can spend this money, is if I could create a part-time position if needed to, and how that looks at the county level.
You know, I think you have to progress along with that, see what your needs are, what your process is,
and then
present
it
to the commissioners in terms of a formal motion, and I think we can take care of that. I am here to say, and I'm sure the commissioners, if they think otherwise, will feel free to speak up, but the commissioners are totally in support of trying to contribute at whatever level in whatever area is needed for this concern. So the answer to that is proceed with that, find the person you need, present it back to us, and we will take care of it in the fashion.
And as I get a budget for that COVID money and get more direction, then I'll be I'll present that to you guys too, and what we initially start to look at and how we spend that money.
Okay.
Because until I have really some clear direction on what we can spend that money for, it's really hard to. the federal guidelines have not come, but you know, it all has to be flown through a certain line item, so it's tracked, and then we'll have very strict restrictions on probably what.
Let me just take this opportunity to say that I think we are fortunate that the county commission doesn't have to follow the bureaucratic guidelines and red tape. So what we're saying is, I understand that situation and appreciate your efforts in terms of working proactive and forward with that, and we can backfill it. But fortunately for us, and fortunately for our citizens and our community, we can go ahead and make those kind of decisions now. So that's why we're here, and that's what we want to do.
We appreciate it, because I know some counties can't do that, and they're very strict on, you know, of being able to month to month, you know,
we're
have
fortunate.
Their counties be able to.
We're fortunate.
So then, you know, I think as we lean into a little bit more of the backup plans of level 2 and 3 for medical stuff, we start to look at some of the other needs. And I don't know that we've totally ferreted out all of those, but I can let Dr. Fitzsimmons on the front end start to talk about clinic.
Just for a moment, for clarification for the commissioners, could you give a brief explanation of what you're referencing to when you say level 2, level 3?
So this is my vision. It's not totally ferreted out, but we're going there.
Yeah.
But level one, I feel like, is now, you know, like the plan we've got going with the flow. Mm-hmm. Level two moves up when we have more testing available and it's in county, and it looks totally different guidance on how, you know, we're testing and following people.
So level two would include positives from within the county.
Yeah, and okay. How, you know, maybe we take care of those people at home. Mm-hmm. In services that they might need. Level three moves deeper into that thing when there's no hospital beds and
worst
others.
Case scenario.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Dawn mentioned some stuff which maybe she could say. I mean, I see one of our big needs is probably oxygen. You know, and she has some mechanisms maybe to buy. I'll let you come.
Well,
or talk about.
Because we can get some concentrators and things like that from direct supply, and Jenna and I are going to go into that a little bit more on Monday when we ferret out more of the medical needs, because we still have purchasing power yet for the oxygen concentrators, but we, you know, there's still Lincare to bring in on that,
mm-hmm.
So I don't have good numbers on that right now, but it's a potential. We have been warned, or I don't know, warned is the right word, cautioned, that there's concern for a shortage of portable oxygen being made available to our rural communities, and the difference in a concentrator is that's not a portable oxygen tank. For those of you who don't know, it's a device that plugs into the wall to provide oxygen, and so it doesn't run out. It's not necessarily a finite resource. As long as the machine works, we have oxygen. And we certainly use those extensively at Sublet Center. I have extra for my small people in the nursing wing, but we'll likely get some more for people in our apartments and over on that.
Dawn, with respect to that, is that something you anticipate that you're going to need financial assistance with? Because, excuse me, I don't know if you're getting a good rate on the concentrators or not, but we all know those things cost between $600 and $800 a piece.
Yeah, potentially. Like right now, I'm not potential. I'm doing my line item on the various things. Like we're going to need an increase in PPE.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, as I've said, we're shut down to outside visitors who are not medically necessary visitors. So certainly we still want our physicians and public health coming in, but casual visits are not. But PPE is, we're going to need some of that. I'll have invoices or potential invoices by Monday, so I'll know more then.
Is there any anticipated problem with supply of the personal protective equipment?
Yes.
Well, luckily we bumped up on that totem pole, you know, with the nursing home concerns that have come up, so I'm opened up to a little more. I'm not rationed to the extent that I was last week, so we're going to buy up to our rations. I feel cautiously optimistic, but
the reason I say that is because we had this discussion when we talked to the individuals from the senior centers and the sublet center and the grocery retailers yesterday. If that is going to be a perceived area of shortage, my advice would be to turn your order in today.
Yeah.
Same way with the clinic. And if there's financial shortcomings because of that, that's what we're here for. We don't want to wait till we need.
We're just kind of limited. They will only
okay so much.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm buying
yeah.
up to that.
And we're buying right up to that.
Okay.
And it's kind of get in line in the check, and even though it's all total on back order, at least get your name in the in line for when they do get supplies.
Okay. Some of the companies aren't allowing back orders, and they're just canceling if they don't have them on the shelf. So you have to watch it daily and watch for those to become available and jump right then to get them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Any other sources, if we're looking at that equipment, primarily the mask, any other sources in the county that may have some that can contribute if necessary?
The building, the lumber yard, or the sometimes they
have. Or the town?
Those are gone. We do have, I'm making inquiries on the QT of who has stuff. It's one of those things, too, that it's just kind of crazy right now, world, that clinics and hospitals have to lock up because
mm-hmm.
that they're disappearing off the shelf and it's not.
Well,
so we have some, yeah, but it is not, we don't have, you know, we don't have what we need for probably our partners. But that also is getting changed, too, on some of what the requirements are and what is going to be acceptable under more dire circumstances. You know, we may not all be 9 and 95. masks. We may be okay to just wear a surgical mask.
Yeah, that's actually come out in the last week, that situations where they, where the CDC says you can wear the surgical mask instead of the N95s.
And they have extended the use of N95s, haven't they? So you can wear them longer? Or
I think they let us wear them for 8 hours.
Right.
We have some PAPRs, and so does the clinic, so that's good, which is the big helmet with the air supply, so those are nice. And then I think we're getting some direction from the state. They're figuring out fit testing so that we can fit test partners and make sure that people are fitted for their masks that they need to.
You know, we do have some capability to do that down in Marbleton, too.
So those are all kind of things, which is kind of leans towards some of our partners as we start to gear up on all this stuff. We need people to
those the oxygen concentrators be one of those things you get while you can.
Yeah.
And get as many as you can.
And I have Lincare looking at it, but they haven't totally, I haven't gotten back with them to see, you know, what they're, if they can, you know, what they're, same thing pharmacies too, that's another discussion. You know, what are our perceived medical, you know, medication
needs.
Let's talk
about that for a minute.
Yeah, and whether we should cache a little supply of common medications in case there becomes a shortage. We just had, you know, casual discussions on that. We've never gone farther than that.
I would think it would be critical. We had a brief discussion yesterday about pharmaceuticals. And even though the local pharmacies may be adequately inventoried or stocked, there could arise a situation where you can't get to the pharmacy. It's not so much the case with altitude because of a drive-through window. I don't know if Risley's has that capabilities, but I know specifically Bernie's and Big Piney. If there were an instance that arose with their having limited personnel or ability to keep the door of the store open, that automatically closes the pharmacy. Now, the pharmacist has indicated that he would be willing to deliver some of those medications, but as you know, it's quite a bit more of a complicated deal because of federal regulations having a sign for that medication and so on. So I think it would be very key for the clinics to look at what would be, how to build up an inventory of the most prescribed medications for heart disease, lung disease, diabetes, and so on. I know that's not your typical thing, but not only would you have the ability to pass them out on a limited basis if you're sending somebody home for quarantine for two weeks, but you might be able to assist that problem. And there again, I know that's an added expense in terms of the healthcare district and stocking medicine that may have a shelf life of only 6 months, but that's where we want to, you know, stand in the gap in terms of the county if we can help you with that.
Yeah, I think that probably something to throw on our Monday morning list. Mm-hmm. And I think that wouldn't be too hard to develop a list of, you know, the more common essential medications and perhaps
we can maybe come to you on Tuesday.
Supply.
Do you have time on your meeting on Tuesday if we can be add on?
We don't have a meeting on Tuesday.
Oh, you don't.
Our meeting's not until the 24th.
Okay.
We postponed it. Are we delayed because of spring break?
We're
not meeting until the 24th, and it will be in Marlton. But whatever you need next week, let me know.
Okay.
If you need me to attend the meeting, let me know.
Monday morning, 8:15.
Where?
At our office.
Pinedale?
Yeah, you guys, I know, are coming up here every day, you and Joan.
What did you say about getting an apartment out of here? Just getting an apartment. Yeah. Be there if we need to. Okay.
So, Doc, you've answered a lot of my questions as far as the Rural Healthcare District is concerned and getting additional medications and the costs involved. But what about our people, like our employees, our district employees? We may at some point have to call in a lot of additional employees. And right now, our budget line for salaries is, you know, is tight. So that's a question. I mean, I want to be free and feel good about these people being able to call in anybody they need.
We're trying to develop our volunteer list and seeing how that gets managed to fill needs. Mm-hmm. But asking someone to gown up and work an 8 or 12 hour shift is a lot. And I don't know what kind of help the medical side is getting from, like, federal
monies? I don't know. Well, if there's a plan there at the federal level to help.
Yeah. And the money would be might be nice, but the real problem is the existence of skilled people. Personnel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the fact that we're already kind of operating pretty close to the margin in terms of the, you know, we don't really have a lot of people that we can spare. So I don't know what to say about that, because I think if we get to that situation where we're losing skilled personnel, probably everybody else around us is too. You know, they just...
I think I just want to know that we can call people in and pay them
overtime
if they need, if we need to do that.
Okay, I'm going to ask the commissioners what you think about that.
Well, I'm going to address some of those concerns. I think this commission is in a position to get what you need. Just go get it. Don't wait. And then bring us the bill. And I think, with at least from my perspective, we'll take care of what the overage has to be.
Commissioner Reihauser?
It's just like we've been meeting the last 3 days, and that's kind of been the general consensus of the county commission. When it gets to that point, you just need to get it written down and bring it to us. And we're in a unique situation. We're able to handle it financially.
And, Mr. Bousman?
I concur, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And I think we're speaking with the same voice. This is what we're going to have to do. Now, since you brought that up, it's going to give me a segue into another area of concern. And that would involve probably utilization of your EMS or your EMTs. There will probably be the need, in terms of the volunteer efforts, with the volunteer groups, the networking, so on, that we may, if somebody is quarantined with the COVID virus for 14 days in their home, and most people we treat are going to be quarantining their home for self-treatment, we will need medical personnel to periodically check on them. Some of these can be done by phone calls. Some of them may need to be done in terms of visits, checking.
Plus, we're thinking about having some telehealth of it pretty easily available for that, too.
But you may have to have someone go in to check O2 sats or check vital signs or whatever. And I see that as a key role for your EMTs. Yeah. And with in lines with what you were just asking, that is something that we're willing to help with the financial responsibility of as well. Jenna, you and I talk, it's a resource we're going to be needing, because we have a shortage of volunteer nurses. We have a shortage of nurses, period.
Yeah.
And if we're going to need that, it's good to know that we can, if you can begin to talk to them and see if we can get a list of people that who may not be on call but be available. And if
we're working on that.
Yeah, and if there's
and what they'd be willing to do, because I'm not willing to put some of our older, you know, like people that don't want to be on the front line, but can they make those phone calls? Can we triage some of that stuff? You know, what roles are appropriate and what are they comfortable with?
Would make sense sending somebody over 60 into a home with somebody that's got COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Yeah, gotcha.
What role do you want to play, Dr. Green?
I'll be on the phone.
I think a lot of that's, you know, the really our Monday thing, you know, we're trying to really do the medical side really deep and trying to really lean into that level.
Yeah, and I think it's a key point for discussion in terms of the medication and the stockpile on that. I don't know how you would handle that in terms of numbers, types, whatever, that you guys could get
together. Similarly, we want to think about the medications we have available in the clinic, especially if we had to, you know, hold any people and deliver inpatient care and things like that. So we may want to beef that up too.
Right. And then I just want to make this clear to the community that the efforts that we're doing, whether it's with food services or with medications, we are not competing with local businesses. Those businesses, as long as they're open, as long as they're able to meet in that supply, that's what we're going to be doing. We're looking at emergency supplies for shortages, be it in food, be it in Tylenol, over-the-counter medications, be it in Pampers for older adults, or be it with the medications. So we all need to know we are not trying to compete with our local businesses. We are just trying to augment what they have there so we can supply the needs of the people in the community. district.
Okay.
Any questions or comments from the public at this time?
Joel?
Yeah, Joel. Joel, you got something?
No, I'm good.
Okay, questions from the public?
What about getting the public getting, I go to Altitude Drug, am I going to be able to get an extra month of my prescription, or...
Let me address that, because that is a legitimate concern, and I think that's something that involves talking not only to your primary care provider, but dependent upon what insurance program you're on. And I think, looking at it nationally, I think the Trump administration has tried to address this, because it's a key problem. We have numerous patients in the county on maintenance medications that get a 90-day supply. As you, if any of you have ever been there, you know you got about a 3-day window to fill that prescription. You can't fill it 5 days early. What would be helpful is if we could get that extended to a several-week period, or even get a 6-month period. But that's going to have to be worked out individually with your insurance carrier, with your primary care provider. Now, if you were going to be self-pay on this, I'm sure you could go to your primary care provider, who would be understanding and might give you that 3-month supply. But it's going to have to be something that's worked out between the pharmacist and their regulations with their insurance companies and your provider. But it's a key point, because everybody ought to be encouraged to try to do that. And that may change. I mean, you may have a prescription that's due at the end of this month, and by the end of this month, you don't know what the situation is going
to
be.
Yeah, I don't think we'd want to have the pharmacists involved in that discussion, because, you know, we don't want to get a run on that stuff the way it's been a run on toilet paper and get ourselves into that position, you know.
So the other thing, I think, and Sharon can speak to this a little bit about billing for testing and stuff, that the stuff we've found so far, because, and then as we try to close some loops for people.
The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and Blue Cross have all talked to Donald Trump, and anything that is related to your diagnosis of COVID-19, the insurance companies are going to pay at 100%, and they've waived the copay. So we know for sure Blue Cross has signed on to that. We know Medicare and Medicaid have signed on to that. So if you come in and you have a diagnosis that is COVID-19, your insurance is going to pay for it at 100%, and there will be no out-of-pocket for the patient.
And in testing through the Wyoming Department of Health is always, yeah, so, and we'll see how that looks as it goes forward, but we just want, you know, by the, when we get to the point where we're doing more mass testing, then we'll make that information available, but, you know, at that point we'll want more people, you know, because then we can identify who's got disease and more.
And the prevalence, you know. I have an idea what we're up against.
Mm-hmm. Any other perceived areas of needs? And we talked about plenty, but I think if these, as they arise, and you as the county health officer, you as public health, you as being the medical director at the clinic, you know what our stance is. If you need help, we're there. All you got to do is ask us.
Thank you.
Do creative thinking in terms of what you may need, whether it's common medical supplies or uncommon ones that you may need, that you might be able to get, whether it's Tylenol for your shelf or whatever, and let us know how we can help.
Thank you.
And please, whatever the staff needs to protect themselves, make sure there's plenty of that.
And I think as we build our systems and our volunteers and stuff, we're going to have channels so that we have triggers that are very, you know, bumps us up, or we need, you know, this is so that the system can let us know.
And escalate it as necessary.
So I have a question going back to the incubation period. So if you're tested positive, then what happens after the 14 days?
After the 14 days, as far as we know, you're mostly not transmitting it anymore, and you're unlikely to have serious complications from it. You get past that 14 days. You're
but in some instances, we will probably have you in contact with your provider or a nurse calling to make sure that you're symptom-free and that we're closing that loop to release you from your...
Okay, then as a follow-up, because I am in that age group, as several of us are. I'm not coughing yet.
Cover it up.
But if I get cleared, so to speak, how far down the road am I not going to be susceptible to that again, or will I always be?
I would say that you're not going to be susceptible to this strain again. Now, that's, you know, nobody's told me that definitively, but that's the case with other coronaviruses, that you'll, if you have a healthy immune system, you'll be immune to it.
Yeah, and I think that's something we're going to, we don't have enough information about.
Yeah.
You know, most viruses die out in the warmer weather. Well, this one, we don't know.
Yeah.
Most viruses, within 14 days, you're not shedding viral particles and you're not infective. Is that the case with this one? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, the things you go by, that we go by a lot, is your clinical signs and symptoms. If you have no longer experienced fatigue, cough, respiratory problems, congestion, whatever, then you're presumed to be clear. It may come to a point for some individuals, if more testing is available, you may be tested again just to double check. But right now, we have a shortage of tests and being able to do that.
Yeah, this is a new coronavirus, so there's new things and things we don't know about it. But we know a lot about coronaviruses, so in general, you know, you get past those 14 days, you're kind of going to be in the clear. Now, some people who have serious illness may still have repercussions just because not everybody gets well.
And it's that second week that they're starting to see the more severe illness. And so right now the clinic's protocol is to follow up with phone calls every 48 hours. So though that's, at this point, what will be done to make sure that people, especially if you have a positive, and then from public health, I will be monitoring too, so that we can try to catch those people if they're going into decline, to get them back into the system. And then part of that too is just your personal provider, you know, the clearance from them, or if you have other underlyings.
Wendy, I think you had a question.
Yeah, is there any data available now on, like, the pneumonia shots, if that would, for an older person with underlying medical conditions, do the pneumonia shots help prevent the pneumonia that comes on?
We encourage everyone over 65 to get their pneumonia shot. We are giving a lot of pneumonia shots. We are out of flu vaccine, but that's typical because we run out the beginning of February. We gave 1,200 plus doses this year, and I'm not sure how much the clinic gave, but but we don't have flu vaccine.
I'm just wondering if there's any data available as far
not
as
that I know about, but everybody is recommending that if you can have those, especially the pneumonia shot.
And a booster.
Yeah.
Over 65?
No, if you are over 65 without any underlying health conditions, you need one Pneumovax 23. If you have questions about that, call public health and we'll look at your record.
Protect you from pneumococcal pneumonia.
Mm-hmm. 23, yeah, different strains, yep. Okay, well, I think we'll get back with you on some of those, you know, as we identify, but yeah, we'll start ordering some of our...
Any questions from the public? Joy.
I know this is a very kind of being very practical and everything and talking about stockpiling things, but there are people in places that are where there's panic. And I mean, look at the toilet paper and the hand sanitizer thing. Mm-hmm. If you want to be prepared to spend 2 weeks at home, you might not even be able, if everyone plans like that, there are going to be shortages in everything, it seems like. My, even I guess I'm just thinking, even if you're being logical and practical about how you address this, if everyone does that, there's still going to be shortages. And I just wonder how you can deal with that. But I guess...
Yeah, don't panic. Let's just prepare. You know, if you have to stay home. You know.
Yeah.
And I know, but there is just that mentality, and I don't know how to get around that.
I just feel like the things that we take for granted as public might be there for us because who would think there was a run on toilet paper?
But I think the other thing is that we live in a community that will share. So not everybody would be confined for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And we have neighbors and people you can call and they can find.
And as we gear up our community
right.
volunteers and stuff, we're going to take care of each other. Mm-hmm. We do in this county. And
I know.
Help.
I've already shared toilet paper.
And, you know, if you're not sick, you might do that. You know, you might be part of our community network to drop off a box, a delivered, you know, box from that they purchase okay. online from the grocery store, you know, yeah. so that, but that's just our networking and we do for each other and that's what we'll do.
Yeah, I think it's an opportunity for us to develop that
county.
Have those
yeah,
networks that kind of reaches out and makes sure everybody has what they need and does the sharing.
Just looks a little different when we can't go to their, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for those who want to volunteer, who are they going to contact? Where is that? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be an online source, or are you going to?
Mm-hmm. So, if you want to call Angie at our office, I'll take your names. And then Emily Ray's starting a list too. I'm starting a list of medical and then just community volunteers. I've talked to our Red Cross, and then starting to get some key players like Joan and then Mindy Crabb, and you know some of those. Organizer people that we have, and then we can kind of, as we look to maybe lean into some of our partners for how we make that look and how those services get delivered. And
I think the starting point is going to be public health, because public health has the flowchart. Public health has organized the different levels and the people involved in those levels, including as it goes down the line, the networks, the neighborhoods, that type of thing. So getting your name on the list,
churches,
primarily going
you know.
Through public mm-hmm. health. Okay. Maxine, did you have a question?
Well, the same question.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Is there a role the towns can play?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Right there. Well, okay, we connected you guys. Okay. Yes. And we'll try, yeah. And I'm trying to do an officials kind of report and then an update, and then with our PIO, he's pushing me to do a little video.
What's a PIO?
Public
health information. The guy next to you.
Travis.
Travis does a very good job.
Uh-huh. I'm trying to get the same message and get that messaging out so that people do have clear direction. But yeah. But yes, please talk to Joan, and as we build the network, North and South County, I'm not quite sure how that's looking yet, but we'll get it.
Well, the goal mm-hmm. is to have it...
kind of know, some plans and names on lists and some ideas up front before...
Broken down into smaller mm-hmm. units where there's not just mm-hmm. towns, but neighborhoods and outer line areas and everything. We're trying to
yep.
get...
And we have, we, you know, we're very fortunate. We've got some of those really talented community organizer
yes.
people, North and South County.
Right.
Are you going to talk more about mm-hmm. that kind of community or public involvement today? Or is that something, you know, like Janet was asking, you know, mm-hmm. if you wanted to do something to help. Is I know, I see Tom here from the food mm-hmm. basket.
So our food baskets, yeah. and I have talked to, but yeah, I'll let you speak to that. I think at this point, you kind of all have your network of people you already serve. And I'm not sure how much more expansion is available there, but I think definitely for people, I think we're going to have our over 65 crowd, and then I think we'll have some back doors into that, but that'll be a process that's ferreted out by nurses probably if they meet criteria, so that we don't just have floods of people coming to our senior centers to get free meals or get meals, you know, sign up for meals when they don't really have the capacity. You know, we'll just have to judge that. But we also are working with our schools to think about, you know, kids, if they're home from school, you know, can they still get a cold meal if they're on free and reduced lunch? You know, how's that look? But food baskets, K too, you know, like community donations, is that where we want to focus that effort?
Yeah, let's food donations are really kind of one of those. They're really great and they really aren't so great. They're great if they're directed. They're not so great if people are cleaning out their pantries. And we get a lot of clean out my pantry, and you know, you have expiration dates of 2010 and whatever, and we just have to get rid of it. And people want to do the right thing, but it creates more work for us. And so our very best donation drives are when the organization wants to do the drive, talks to Jamie Mills, our food distribution manager, and gets specifics. Then they are successful. Now, something else, and this kind of plays into it, is I think one of our concerns is what's going to happen downstream, because if there's an awful lot of closures, eventually people are going to start working less and losing their jobs. And that's where we come in, is when people are in marginal situations. And we don't have tight guidelines, but we do have guidelines that we use. And right now, we're since fall, we've been feeding between 100 and 120 families a month, which is really pretty high. And I'm going to just give you a peek into our budget. We've allocated $4,000 a month for buying food. And that doesn't include, you know, what gets donated, what I would call the directed donations for food. And that's an awful lot of money, but, you know, like any organization, and we've been very fortunate to have some good years, but like any organization, we do have limits. And so our concern is probably going to be what happens downstream when people begin to lose jobs or lose hours. And so I think that's where, you know, just keep that in the back of your mind, because I don't have any sense of how we're going to deal with it, but, you know, we'll figure something out. That's something to keep in mind, because right now we're talking, when I'm listening here, talking about something that is immediately and kind of you know, mid-range, but when you start looking out there, there's possibly long-term.
And there's obviously some federal discussions around that. What's that going to look like? I don't know, but that's going to be too late.
Right.
I mean, that's going to be late.
Right.
Would money be your best resource to be able to expand those services?
I hesitate to say yes, if it's kind of mm-hmm. obvious, because we all want to have more money. I hesitate to say yes, because it's also a matter of space, and it's a matter of people's time. And so I think there's a place for us. Let us kind of gradually get into it, so that I don't have to make...
I want you guys, as part of our really deep discussion, Jamie couldn't come yesterday to that meeting because it was your food distribution day, but, and Kay either, but, you know, like, how that looks, because that is an integral part, and I think we start with the kids,
right.
You know, and starting to meet some of those needs there, but there's still going to be families, and
right.
Then, you know, there may be jobs at a senior center if, you know, if some of those people that are laid off at school can, you know, help Joan in her kitchen a couple days, you know, like, I don't know. But how do we kind of keep people working different ways?
You know what would help with from the communication that went out, you know, I can get my name and phone number
mm-hmm.
to you to contact me, because I heard about the meeting yesterday, then I heard about the meeting today, but I heard about it.
It's all been, sorry, I know, it's really
no,
quick.
No, it's not your fault, that's not
I
your
know.
Fault. Because, you know, people see are our managers. And that's who they need to see. But I'll get you my name so that there's meetings, and we make sure that if I'm not there, the right person is there.
Uh-huh, to try to help look on
right.
the front end of those mm-hmm. needs. But yeah, if you guys can internally start having some of those discussions, because you know your population, and you know, and it may be that you can only
service those 100, 120 families that are already on your list. I mean, Joan's looking at that, but so Sue, you know, they're kind of, they have their network of seniors, and they may expand that, but there's going to have to be a process that they still register and pay for their meal, and, you know, we'll
And we are hitting our seasonal transition time. This is when typically people move off of our client list and get jobs, or sometimes just move out. And so we're in that transition time right now.
Well, Tom, I think we discussed that somewhat yesterday when we were talking about other available resources in the community, be it the Lions Club or the Red Cross or volunteer services, include
churches.
People that are
you know,
willing,
that's the other piece.
Willing to make donations. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be their area of focus, is working with those people that fall in that category, especially downstream, because we do recognize there's going to be a significant number of people impacted that aren't going to have their hourly wage, their jobs that live paycheck to paycheck, and trying to look at that. So that has been considered. And Joy, to your question, this is not all developed, outlined yet, but it'll be rapidly done by the beginning of next week, because that process has already been started, and we accomplished that, or moved in that direction yesterday.
I think you also, are the churches involved in this mix? Because
yes.
I know UCC has a backpack program. Mm-hmm. They do.
So, yeah, as we develop that community side, and that's probably
the
where I need
network.
More help. I
yeah.
mean, I just we just have to have more help to try to
sure.
get those volunteer pieces, medical and community wide, to just get it geared up.
Well, I could say one other mm-hmm. thing, maybe two other things, and I'll back, be quiet. We had two freezers go out the past couple of months, temporary freezers, so that's where right now we're down on our capacity. It's just a matter of finding two freezers. And then the secondhand backpack program, we've made donations, we'll be willing to make donations again to the backpack program.
So Bernie's has extra freezer room, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other conversations
well,
we started
about,
to have a little
we,
bit
we
yesterday.
We talked about
but
how to pool resources mm-hmm. to be able to help with some of these foods. For instance, Bernie's freezer capacity is right now probably three times larger than they need. So that's an adequate resource for Southwest Pioneers if they need more freezer space, to be able to use the freezer space there. If we're talking, Tom, simply in your case, about floor space for storing stuff, county has availability on that too, in terms of the fairgrounds or whatever. We have plenty of storage space. So what we've done with the grocers is try to alert them so that they can increase their orders. We're not paying for their food. They're using them for the private market. But we will be working towards an arrangement where we can fill an order with them for cost plus if we find out there's areas of shortages, whether it's for the food basket or whether it's for either one of the senior centers or the sublet center or whatever. That's the idea behind it. So they're working with us in that capacity to go ahead and get the orders in the event that things start to get constricted from their supply places, which is primarily Salt Lake, that we can at least have some capability there.
So where is, I'm really, really, really interested in hearing more about Janet's question, the community follow through, because I think the public right now, you know, I think people want to get started, you know, not official county employees or anything, but just people around that.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, we will be looking at a meeting next week, and we'll, I'll get with my team, and because we're just building that week by week. We started the food conversation yesterday, but, we'll get out of time as quick as we can.
I would think that's a priority for
mm-hmm.
your upcoming meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yep. Monday we can figure out. Yeah. And so it's going to be a little fluid.
So what are you figuring out Monday?
A lot of stuff. meetings on top of meetings and, yeah, information flowing from lots of different information. So, yeah, what do you want to... I think, you know, we're just...
we're gathering that list and it's growing every day.
Mm-hmm.
New things come up and new people want added and it's an ever-evolving thing.
So what are you...
There's no clear answer because it's growing as we go.
Mm-hmm.
And the needs grow as we go. And
Angie?
As we get the needs...
Call, and call or email.
Travis, you said you've got a growing list of...
So medical volunteers, we're looking at food services, and that's probably in the community side, that thing. I've got officials lists, I've got school administrators and healthcare professional lists. I, you know, like, it's a lot. So it's coming. Email Angie, we'll get you on the list. We'll get an information out as soon as we can on when those meetings are happening.
I think he's got my email.
Mm-hmm.
But
you probably need to notify Angie and probably say you want to be on a community list,
and
a community
Angie,
volunteer.
Angie
Colas at Public
oh,
Health.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
367-2157.
I know who she is.
Yep. And that too, public, you know, general questions about, we're fielding tons of questions out of our office about, and that's great. But if you have directed, you know, individual medical care questions and you're sick, that's the clinic, so we, you know, can kind of help balance them so they can focus on their jobs.
And we answer that phone all day and all night.
That's okay. Thanks, Dr. Burnett.
Anything else?
I just kind of want to, you know, reinforce what Dr. Burnett started out taking at the bottom of all this is the mitigation efforts, and so we can't push them hard enough. So the social distancing, the washing the hands, you know, keeping your hands off your face, and maybe staying away from people if you're showing any symptoms of illness. It's not going to go on forever, but the more we can do of that, especially early on, that's going to win. It's going to have the biggest effects in terms of spreading this out and making it less of a problem for us to deal with.
So how is, I know this is different than H1N1, but there were so many more deaths and so many more deaths and infections, just the regular flu every year. Why is this so much more serious? Or why does it seem so much more serious?
I guess there's two things that concern everybody about this, and one, that it spreads pretty fast, and two, it is more lethal than that H1N1. So
it's new. Nobody has immunity to it, so if it floods through our
community,
it just overwhelms our system.
We have no medicines for it. We do have medicines for the flu now.
So we don't have adequate testing either. I mean, there's a lot of differences.
From the federal level,
virus.
Yep, and that's
we don't have adequate updated information. We don't know how many people have been exposed. We don't know what the prevalence of it is. So we're all dealing with that. It's a new virus, and there are many things about this virus we don't know. Not the least of which is, does it behave like the rest of the viruses? We don't know. Okay, I don't want to pick on Superintendent Garvey, but having said that, I think I will. We have Superintendent Garvey from District Number 9, and I would just like to give you a chance, Kevin, if you have anything you would like to add. I know there's been discussion at the south end of the county, particularly with regards of if it were to get to the point, hopefully not in terms of school closure, and I'm talking particularly about lunch programs for kids. Do you have any comments you'd like to make on that?
Thank you, Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'll just say that the Wyoming Department of Education woke up last night and scheduled a phone conference with Dr. Harris at noon today. So we've received almost no information from them except that we're going to be given flexibility on the lunch and breakfast program. We will be able to deliver that to students who are quarantined, and especially our 30% of students who are free reduced lunch. So that was really good news to get this week. They're being quite proactive. Our issue really is we're exactly 6 inches in front of this train as it's coming at us, and we're trying to make decisions that are prudent and all those decisions are impacting our students. We're close to canceling prom. I'm getting phone calls today. Should I buy a dress? I mean, there's very practical tentacles to this thing that we are having a hard time anticipating. So we're making those decisions as best we can and as early as we can and hope that they're the right decisions to make. We're going to have students who are self-selecting to stay home, families that do that. We're going to call them homebound, and we're going to provide them with an education program through our online programs, or we'll do packets. We're prepared to do that. So we're probably, when we come back from spring break, going to be running a dual system for the rest of the school year. We have no intention of closing school unless we're required to. So, and if we have to go to all students don't come, we'll still try to provide an educational program through technology and through packets. So those are the things we're working on right now and getting prepared for. As a separate aside, we're also claiming to be the state basketball boys champs. That is why that got, we think that's possibly why that got canceled.
I can do a photo op on that. But
there are so many tentacles. I mean, our students from Germany, their government said they have to go home today. So they had to come home from, they were in Casper, they had to go home, they're on the plane right now. So there are things happening that are just, it's happening fast. And it's hard to get out in front of those things. So.
Thank you, and thank you for your presence today.
That answered your question.
Yes, it does. Thank you. Anybody else have questions or comments?
I have another question concerning the temperature. So it's my understanding that if the good old earth heats up to a certain degree around, then this virus goes sort of to sleep. Is that correct or not?
Yeah, definitely true that viruses like these are often more active and in the winter months. And so there is some hope that the activity might back off with the warmer weather. If you look at that, the map of the distribution of this is all in the northern hemisphere, although it's starting to pop up in the southern hemisphere. But there is a possibility that this will become less of a problem with the warmer weather. But don't know for that for sure.
So if we moved to Arizona, it would be less happy
there. They're under emergency status. I don't know.
And it doesn't seem to work so far.
We don't know. If it follows typical patterns, yes, but we don't know. Any other questions? If not, before we close, I would like to just reemphasize that we have an excellent team working together. We have had some outstanding work already from our public health department, from our county health officer, from our emergency management, and from volunteer organizations that have already been pursuing ideas and avenues that they could help. And I would not only like to thank you guys, because your toughest work is still going to be coming, but the community needs to know that we are going to act together as a community. And I think with that vigilance that we can emphasize, we're going to do our part to slow down the spread of this. So we are quite fortunate to have the concerned, community-minded people that we have in this county, not just in this time. It's been displayed countless times. So thanks to you guys.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? If not, thank you for your time. Yes,
thank
sir.
You.
Mr. Bousman.
This is Joel. I'd just like to, again, express my appreciation for the way everybody's working together to get on top of this as much as possible. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joel.
So with that, we will hold this meeting, close it, have an adjournment. We may be having future meetings. You'll be kept notified, and we will certainly do our part and be in the loop on these discussions and things moving forward.
Public health. Facebook site,
is getting shared out through the Sheriff's Department
yeah.
site. So that has the latest information. Wyoming Department of Health, if you push on their news tab, it will give you the newest updates from the state of Wyoming, and you can even put your email and get direct all of their newest posts and stuff, which Travis is posting too.
That brings up something else that has been a kind of problem in emergency situations, is that when you get to the more rural areas like Bondurant now, there's no cell service, there's no you know, some people have internet, Verizon, but my cell phone doesn't work up there, and there's no way for me to get internet. So
Travis can talk a little bit to all the media places he's been.
Yeah, so, I mean, here, obviously, on my list, Bob, I always try to include him, too. I'm trying to include all the local media options that we have, and obviously, the best thing we can do as a community, too, is word of mouth sometimes, so if you're here for somebody
else.
What
about putting up posters and flyers?
We have been,
in Bondurant, if you put a poster up at the post office, that reaches a lot more people than...
We are doing a lunch and learn after on the 24th of March, right after lunch at Rendezvous Point at 12:45, and it'll be similar to my update here, but with, we'll add whatever updated information we have and all the community stuff, and also a library program on the 30th at 6 p.m. here in Pinedale. So, and then I think as we start to get our video stuff, hopefully that'll get... like a weekly video every other week, we'll see. And then I'll try, we have our email, trying to keep our officials in the loop. And then just spreading that out through our media sources, too.
Yeah, I still think there are a lot of places where you're going to have to put up a flyer if you want people to know it's...
Emily's been taking a lot of flyers. I just think that's one of the places we need to have it on the list. She's been distributing. Mm-hmm. We've had flyers that we're sharing.
I don't know if she's been going out that far.
Maybe not that far, but her.
That far? We're still in the county.
No, but when you deliver in posters around town, but we need to get it to somebody to get it out there.
I happen to be... That's one of the things I was kind of thinking about earlier. I'll be going up there tomorrow. I mean, I've picked up medication, I picked up tractor parts, I picked up a lot of things. I stay in Pinedale during the week, we go up on the weekends, but
that needs to be built into our community, our community volunteerism and response. Yeah,
go to work in Jackson.
And maybe posting things at the post office that they'll let us put, as we have.
Oh, they've got bulletin boards.
Mm-hmm.
And even Hoback Junction. I mean.
So it sounds like Joy's willing to be a resource to do that. So add her name to the list. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Bob? There are other people that go every day but I'm willing to help.
Don't forget, you do have one local radio station here.
Yes.
We have a program called Post It and Sell at about shortly after 10:30 Monday through Friday, where people post things they want and things they want to sell. For example, if you were to post wanted some used freezers, I bet you'd get a few phone calls on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how many people have stuff in their garage they want to get rid of, and when they hear somebody wants it, they'll respond. So please use us.
Thank you. Anything else? If not, we will convene this meeting, and thanks again for your interest, your presence.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thanks,
and
everyone.
And your efforts.
I'm going to go to the next one.
Okay, well, that's interesting, but I think.